Hey, gracias. KPFT, Houston.
Hi there. You're listening to 90.1 FM. KPFT Houston. Coming up next is a theme song for a show that is coming up next.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Welcome to a very special edition of Technology Bites, wherein we, the people, say a tearful goodbye to Jay Lee.
Wow. Being written off.
We knew him well.
His mustache already died. It went before him.
Ask not.
Something.
Not asked.
All right, I'm over it. Oh, he's still here. What?
Wow, thanks a lot, everybody.
No, this is his last show.
Until forever. I come back.
Forever.
No, it's forever.
No, this is when I have to figure out if it's worth staying up late to listen to you live or just catch it on the podcast.
The great Dev Null in the Sky.
So I don't know what the offset is for New Zealand, but I can tell you that in Sydney right now, I happen to have that time zone already set up, it's 12.03 p.m. You shouldn't have to stay up late at all.
It's in the afternoon?
Yeah.
It's also in the afternoon, just slightly in the future.
It is. It's 12.03 p.m., or now 12.04 p.m. Tomorrow.
That's right.
So that's cool. So if you don't like what we say, call in and we'll change it.
Yeah.
Or you better Twitter. I don't think phones work that way. Twitter does, though.
Twitter does. Yeah. Can you tweet through time?
I think so.
Okay. Well,
tweets
I'm
are timeless.
Steal Kojo's joke about, you know, broadcasting or communicating from the not-too-distant future. I'll be sending out lottery numbers for people to go
awesome,
buy tickets.
Please.
Just got to cut me in.
All right. I have to split all my winnings with Michael J. Fox.
All right, welcome to the show. This is Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Cuckoo. All right. So, yeah.
Jumping the gun on that.
What?
You said cuckoo. He's jumping the gun.
Cuckoo.
Hey, man, cuckoo clocks aren't supposed to be on time. That's a misnomer.
Is that misnomer? Part
of their charm? A misnomer.
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 Who's that? Misnomer.
Misnomer won the beauty pageant.
Subaru is going to cosplay as this Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween is this Saturday.
It is this Saturday. I'm flying out on Halloween.
Ooh.
Are you flying out on a scary ghost plane?
Hopefully he's a real pilot.
It's going to be in that episode of The Twilight Zone.
Yeah, do you ever see Neither Wing? Can you see the wing?
I can see the
awesome. Wing. If John Lithgow's next to you, that's
I love
either
wings.
Or Shatner.
Shatner. All right, so visit us online at www.geekradio.com. Does anybody still say the www's anymore?
Yes, you need to now, because now there are multiple things out there.
It's properly part of it, man.
It could be, you know, W.
Why don't we say the HTTP?
Because then we should be saying HTTPS.
So the scheme is immaterial. We should be using
I have discovered that there are sites that will not respond to a www.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it needs to be programmed in. If it's not, at least on the Linux side, if it's an Apache side or Nginx or whatever you want to use, if you don't specifically either have a catch-all or say, hey, I'm listening for www on the CNAME, it won't respond.
And some people have, especially like some of the newer companies, have started to ditch www. Like they don't even program it. Like,
or wow. You can say www.
You could say that.
Kids do.
Look, technically, you're supposed to have a www if it's a web server, and that's why you put it there to distinguish it in your DNS hierarchy.
Well, you could also do
from FTP
or UU3. I remember the W3 things.
Except nowadays, to most people, the web is the internet, so you don't need the www.
The web's kind of the cloud now.
For those who really like to type, you can visit us online at technologybytes.com.
There is no spoon.
www.technologybytes.com.
HTTP.
://
We better have HTTPS enabled on there.
If you didn't configure your web server right, you do need the slash at the end.
I got the broke chair.
We almost tumbled out of the studio. All right, and also we're hanging out on the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
Yeah. That's awesome. And the channel Tech Bytes on cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
And that's a show within a show, as we call it. You can go there and pretty much break every FCC rule you care to.
I thought you were going to say wind.
Cuckoo.
No, that's, you know, better do it on IRC than in the studio. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
Look at me. Especially with the door shut.
All right, and... yeah, that's it. So,
does everyone dig my new my Surface book?
What?
Ooh. Oh, where's your?
It's on paper. I don't know if I should say who sold it to me, but there was a box store that let me buy one early online and said, "Come on in" that morning, and I came on in, and they said, "Oh, it's coming on FedEx. It's not here yet." Uh-huh. So I'm like, "Okay, I'll come back this afternoon." They said, "We'll call first." So I called, and I was on hold for a while, and I talked to them. They said, "Yes, it's here." So I went on in, and they're like, "No, it's not here yet."
Oh.
So I think there's a major disconnect between the warehouse and what's going on. They assured me, they showed me a list, they assured me that as soon as they showed up, I would get one, but it is yet to show up. And it was supposed to be there at 8 a.m. or 10 a.m. on the 26th,
So
Monday.
You got a ghost computer.
I got a ghost computer. I got an electronic receipt.
So you're computing on a back order slip.
Yeah,
back
order slip. Yeah.
There you go.
So you got your computer at Gallery Furniture, right?
Yeah, don't buy. I think they sell computers there, maybe, but don't.
They probably have like some Packard Bells inventory that they store.
Yeah, you know. Buy a bedroom furniture set, get a Gateway.
Hey, would have been a good deal in 1998.
Yeah.
This recliner has a built-in 486. That would be awesome.
That would have been awesome back in the day.
Back when 486s were a thing. Remember? Yes,
yeah.
I do.
Yes.
All right, so, oh, man, I've already checked out, so I'm on vacation starting an hour ago.
Thanks for that, Jay.
Actually, I got one more day of work, and I've got this. You guys are
but you still got a day of work like this? That ought to be interesting.
I think you're starting to feel a cough coming on, Jay.
As it is now, I'm pushing the boundaries by taking so much time.
You might be having an eye problem tomorrow. You can't see yourself going into work.
Jay, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, here's Jay. Yeah, I'm trying to give a damn about your computer, but I just can't.
Well,
no dams to give. Or substitute whatever other career ending word you want to use there.
Yeah, no thanks. at this point, I still got to go back. So, I mean, that could change. Who knows? All right, so
you may find a nice job in New Zealand while you're there.
Be an extra in a Hobbit film.
Yeah.
Sheep herder.
Do Hobbits have computers?
I have hairy feet.
IT support for Hobbits.
I should be the IT administrator for Hobbiton.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
You got hairy feet.
Mm-hmm. Probably what would happen is you'd go there and find out that Hobbiton runs on Novell, which just
hey, now,
turn around and come back home.
Hey,
or they'll trick you into rebooting Sauron.
Sucker. All right, so yeah.
The
there's...
one IP to rule them all.
They use Lotus Notes there in Hobbiton.
The Lotus 1-2 rule them all.
I see what you did there. That was pretty good.
Yeah, the Lord of the Rings. I'm just gonna go there, and every time I end up, and I'm going to New Zealand for those paying attention. Every time I get to a famous or some Hobbit or Lord of the Rings related site,
right.
I'm just gonna say, and this is where Luke Skywalker.
We're never gonna see Jay again. They're gonna detain him.
They
take their hobbits seriously down there.
I'm going to New Zealand because I'm a big Star Wars fan.
And the thing you need to do is, because New Zealanders love it, if they're just generic name, instead of hey you is hey Frodo. Take my bags.
Yep, and make sure that you identify yourself.
Bilbo, over here.
Make sure you say Australia too. Never say you're in New Zealand. Tell them you're in Australia. I'm so glad to be here in Australia.
Keep saying shrimp on the Barbie.
Yeah.
the best place to do the Australia bit is when you're in Austria. They actually sell shirts in Austria that say Australia. Now,
the downside is no one's probably going to notice your Crocodile Dundee costume on the flight.
No,
I have to rethink that. Paul Hogan was a poor costume choice.
Well, I see you played Knifey Spoonie before. All right,
that's not a laptop. Ace is a laptop.
That sounded piratey.
No,
you've
that
got
was,
some
that's
deep pull. Is that Crocodile Dundee?
That was Crocodile. That was very. That was pretty good. That was actually pretty good.
Thank you.
Compliment the man.
Maybe we should. That's what we should do next week. Is we should all just talk New Zealand / Australia.
We'll offend
the
entire
show.
Subcontinent.
Yeah, make everybody angry.
But they won't know they're mad until several hours in the future.
Yeah.
But
they'll know about it in the future. They could preemptively take us out if we're not.
I know what you're
week.
About to say. And pow.
Racially insensitive and stereotypical.
There's so many paradoxes here.
I don't know. I mean, can you? I guess there's no great amount of love lost between the Australians and the New Zealanders. So I think actually your idea of doing the Australian thing
be great.
Probably be bad.
Probably be.
I think the New Zealanders.
Like Michael Jackson.
It would be
bad,
funny.
Good.
Carry themselves a step above the Aussies. As far as their minds go.
Well, I will say this: in my mind, the main difference between New Zealand and Australia that is one of the reasons why I chose New Zealand over Australia as a place to visit is that everything there is not trying to kill you.
Yeah, that's true. In size, yeah. Just general size, you can see you're going to drive all the way around
country.
New Zealand versus if you did that in Australia, we would see you maybe 2017.
If I live.
If you live.
Yeah.
Also in Australia, it's all just a Mad Max set, like 90% of
yeah,
it.
You don't want to deal with Mel Gibson.
Well, it's Tom Hardy now.
I haven't seen the new
it's
one.
Not
oh,
Tom
you
Hardy.
Need to
what's
see the new
name?
One.
Furiosa.
Furiosa. Imperator Furiosa. Furiosa.
Charlize.
Is the new one worth seeing?
Yes.
As long as
yes.
we're all over the place.
Yes.
It is quite
it
excellent.
Is,
okay.
It is yes, highly worth
excellent.
Seeing.
Shiny and chrome.
Yeah, it's pretty Movie. Good.
He doesn't drive a matte black car? It's a complete reboot.
Look, you just have to see it for yourself, my friend.
Yes, you
he
must.
Didn't even have a
several
car.
Times.
Several, yeah, it's good.
He's not even car. The hero.
He has a bicycle.
He walks.
Spoilers. He just walks.
He drives for part of it.
And he's actually just sort of mildly disgruntled.
I was mad, but then I went on a walk.
He's not really
now I'm
mad.
Feeling okay.
Just kind of annoyed through most of it.
I counted to 10.
He has a pebble in his boot.
There's a pee in his mattress. All right, so let's go out to San Antonio and do the Technology Bytes info shot straight from the geek mouth in San Antonio. Take it away, info shot.
It's the Technology Bytes info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
What's that up in the sky? It's a rogue blimp, or it was. The Maryland Patch reports that an aerostat, and a blimp from the Defense Department, basically broke its tether at the Aberdeen Proving Ground in Maryland this morning, and then drifted off through Pennsylvania. The airship manufactured by Raytheon is part of APG's Joint Land Attack Cruise Missile Defense Netted Sensor System, JLENS. I guess JLO was already taken. It's a powerful radar system used to pick up aerial threats. They released a statement earlier this afternoon. Personnel are responding to the tether break at the Joint Land Attack Cruise Missile location on the Edgewood side of APG. It broke free around 11:54 a.m. Approximately 6,700 feet of tether are attached. Emergency personnel are tracking it, which is still aloft and moving towards Pennsylvania. They did scramble F-16s to track the blimp from the Atlantic City National Guard base. In the meantime, citizens are advised to call 911 if they see the blimp overhead, or somehow ascertain just what it has planned. That's a joke from The Verge. But then later it did cause a lot of damage. Apparently the cable from the blimp was dragging the ground in one town and caused major power outages. And then finally, the state police in Pennsylvania threw a beat down on it. Oh no, wait, the blimp was white. It was all white. So they just pulled down the cable and took care of it. But should be interesting to see how much more of this kind of stuff happens with all the kind of internet, the tethered internet type devices that they're trying to do, that, you know, Google's got plans on that. I believe Facebook as well. Although I think theirs are more to, like, drift around on their own as opposed to maybe be tethered. In other news, the researchers have discovered the perfect password that's also easy to remember, according to the Washington Post. They talk about the thing they talk about is that one of the problems for people is that, you know, your password is hard to remember. A good password is hard to remember, and an easy to remember password is easy for a computer to figure out and decode within a fairly small amount of time. There's actually an xkcd.com comic strip that shows that actually talks about this particular technique. And even if you use, you know, substitutions, like substituting other numbers and stuff like that, it's one of those things where a computer can guess it. Their idea came from those poetry deals that you put on your refrigerator, or it's got the different words. And so it makes your password out of a combination of four totally random words, which is very hard for a hacker to crack and fairly easy for someone to remember, because it ends up being like sort of weird poetry. Like in the XKCD comic book, it says correct horse battery staple, which would take a computer making 1,000 guesses a second, 1,000 would take 550 years for it to get it. That they say they can actually, I guess they calculate the bits of entropy, and your like basic, you know, 10 digit or 10 character password that you remember has 28 bits of entropy, and it only takes 3 days for a computer to guess it at random. And of course you could forget it. But essentially, it takes a large number. It takes the four random words are generated based on one very large random number. That random number is then broken up into segments, each of which corresponds with a word in the dictionary. So it's sort of a form of cryptography. To guess the full random number, a computer might have to test billions of billions of billions of possibilities, and you'd have to sound like Carl Sagan and to talk about it was one suggestion. And then, but then the researchers hit on the idea of using it to create a little poem. So that the as researchers point out, humans have been using poetry as a way to remember information for thousands of years. So the whole thing with meter or rhyme, you know, most people today can't recite the Canterbury Tales, but they still had certain sing-songy rhymes permanently burned into their memory, like 30 days hath September, or, you know, I before E except after C kind of stuff. So, you know, this is finally actually one that could give a decent password. But of course you have to change the, you know, you have to generate the password, and I guess it has to be accepted by the system that you're putting in. You know, the number of characters is probably a limit where a lot of these, a lot of them won't take enough for you to put your kind of forward poem in it. But at least now you know what could be done. Different poetry, you know. So of course, then you know what happened. Instead of the old guess the password, which is login admin password god, then it would be password there once was a girl from Nantucket. Now onto the hackery news. This one's kind of different. It doesn't look so different to the people who are the victims of the hack. But the, you know, one of the things that doesn't get talked about a lot is sort of the motivation behind hacks on various providers. This one I came across, there was the Anthem data breach. It was, Anthem Healthcare, which exposed the details of more than 80 million people. One of the questions that came up was, who would do that against a health insurance firm? And why, you know, what would they do with that data? I mean, there's some of the kind of identity theft and all that. Well, investigators finally have some answers, and it's kind of not what you'd expect. Reportedly, the culprits were Chinese hackers, and they're trying to understand how – they're trying to help China understand how U.S. medical care works. It may be part of a concerted campaign to get ready for 2020 when China plans to offer universal health care. If that's the case, the findings might explain a string of health-related breaches in the past few years. None of those involved are commenting, but if this is accurate, the allegations aren't going to help China's attempts to mend its image. They suggest at least some of the healthcare cyber attacks were part of a broader industrial espionage campaign and fly in the face of the Chinese government's claims that it does not embrace hacking. So I, you know, why don't they do? I'm surprised China. Why go through all the work to hack these places? Why aren't they just posting on Stack Overflow, or on Quora? They could go on Quora. There's all kinds of places they could ask about this. But so apparently that's part of, I guess, one. That's the ancient Chinese secret: is steal the answer from American companies. Another more serious one, or more serious as in you can do something about it right now. If you have a Joomla website, especially if you've got Joomla 3.2 and above, actually only if you have Joomla 3.2 and above, which most people should, because that Joomla 3.2 came out in like 2013, I think. But apparently this flaw is large as far as it's kind of a SQL injection vulnerability, and it has been patched with the release of version 3.4.5, and so you definitely need to run Don't Walk to update your Joomla install for this. Essentially, the bug discovered by Orpani exposes a session ID containing a browser cookie that's assigned to an administrator. Hackers can exploit the vulnerability to extract the cookie, then load it into their browser. At that point, then they're basically administrators on that Joomla install. Code exploiting the vulnerability has already been added to the Metasploit framework used by hackers and penetration testers. Quote, by pasting the session ID we've extracted, that of an administrator in this case, to the cookie section in the request to access the /administrator folder, we're granted administrator privileges and access to the administrator control panel. This is the researchers Asaf Orpani, who works at Trustwave's Spider Labs. So the patch came out last Thursday. If you haven't installed it yet and you've got a Joomla install, hurry, do it. And then in kind of other in online harassment news, I guess everybody's heard about South by Southwest had a panel about Gamergate, and then there was actually two panels about Gamergate. One was people who were talking about it as harassment, you know, pro and con Gamergate, and South by Southwest canceled both events. On Tuesday, BuzzFeed and Vox Media threatened to withdraw from participating in South by Southwest due to the cancellation of the two panels. Barely a day later, South by Southwest has seemingly reversed its decision. One of the panels has been reinstated, and South by Southwest is now considering hosting a day-long event about online harassment. So they're going to invite all those people who've been harassed online into one public place, and then the harassers are going to come and they're going to talk it out. I don't know. According to Recode, which is owned by Vox Media, South by Southwest has approached both its parent company and BuzzFeed to discuss including the major media brands in the event. Though the previously canceled panel was called Level Up, Overcoming Harassment in Games, that's been reinstated. Its speakers have not yet agreed to return. The other panel that was canceled was called Save Point, a discussion on the gaming community, has not been revived and is associated with the Gamergate scandal from last year. So we'll see what happens in that all day. It's somewhat fraught. I get why they would cancel it. Gamergate can be pretty serious with the various threats and so on. It seems like the all day online harassment thing might be even riskier than the two events they canceled. And then finally, this one kind of goes under weird science, but I think I would file it more under maximum stupidity. There was Ars Technica had this story, and it's about climate science and a Texas congressman. There's a recipe for you know, good things happening. Texas Congressman Lamar Smith, who used to be my congressman. Not my congressman as in I voted for him, but he represented the district I was in, but not anymore. He sent requests to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, demanding data and communications relating to a recent update of NOAA's global surface temperature data set. NOAA provided Rep. Smith with all the data methods and explanation he requested, but has refused to hand over the communications of its scientists, which it regards as protected. Obviously, when somebody is subpoenaing internal communication, it means they think that there's been some kind of, you know, something's not been, you know, that there's some kind of conspiracy or something. Representative Smith has stopped short of actually accusing NOAA of anything like that. Up to now, that's changed with a statement that Representative Smith provided the magazine Nature for its news coverage of the subpoena. Basically, I'm going to summarize this thing. Basically, he says that he pulls out, if you've been following the climate change discussion, a real popular thing that was debunked some, you know, a few weeks ago, was that there's been a pause, that the temperature wasn't really going up for the past two decades, and so there's something wrong. And then when the numbers were corrected, that was just somebody's trying to fake the numbers to essentially make global warming a thing again. Smith clearly suggests that NOAA is manipulating its results to further an external agenda. actually ties it to the administration. So he's kind of trying to make it like it's an Obama thing, even though his office has been provided with the raw and corrected data, as well as the details of the methods and a personal accounting of the rationale behind them. He's still accusing the scientists who published the paper in Science of fudging their results. The evidence seems to consist of the fact that Representative Smith, not a scientist, doesn't like the results. The claim of, quote, no warming for the past two decades, unquote, is simply false. But more importantly, the numbers that are at question here don't differ in any meaningful way from NASA's numbers or any other independent surface temperature data sets. But Representative Smith, who chairs the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology, thinks that digging through emails of NOAA scientists will somehow show that they were pawns of the government in doing their science. So he wins the Idiot of the Week award from Technology Bites. Anyways, that's the news.
And that's the news.
All right. No.
I'm just waiting for, you know, maybe there needs to be like an, you know, they used to have the Internet Weather Report, but it was network stuff. Maybe now there should be the Internet Stupidity Report, and they can, you know, big clouds of like online harassment and climate change denial can be like up on the map and have a green screen. And that's when we go all video, we can do that.
It's still kind of just the Internet, though.
this is true. That's why
recursive graph of itself is what we'd be after.
That's why I wonder about South by Southwest having an entire day devoted to online harassment. We've gathered every single person who's been harassed on the internet in one place. It's like that's like having a D&D convention next to the bully convention.
Yeah, it's like surprise. We brought all the harassers on this stage. Let's see what happens. Here's Jerry.
Now
Springer
let's hug it out.
I don't know if that would work. I don't think they would do that.
Well, that's probably the most hype South by Southwest Interactive has gotten in a while. So
yeah.
They'll probably have some good numbers this year.
It's a big deal. The show itself, South by Southwest, is an enormously big deal. And I think it's sort of a self-perpetuating big deal. Companies want to get involved in it, and that drags the press in, which drags more companies in, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, although it hasn't had a big bump, like, you know, it hasn't had something emerge from it like Twitter or that kind of thing. I think one of the problems, you know, outside of the whole online harassment concept thing is at some point it's got to max out on size where it just becomes so unwieldy that, you know, how can it really make news, or else it has to be longer or, so it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
I went to the film version of it back in the late 90s when there was an actual focused film section inside of it. It wasn't nearly as big. Me and a couple of buddies road tripped up to Austin and watched some really amazing independent movies and some really terrible independent movies. had a great time doing it, but yeah, I mean, it was totally a different show, and this must have been in 1997. So yeah, totally different show back then.
The Gamergate stuff, they need to get that in check. No one's really taking it serious. It's like it's all a game to a lot of these people.
I see what you did there. That was pretty good.
Well, I guess the one of the interesting things, and obviously we don't want to delve too far to the Gamergate thing, though, is how quickly it stopped being about what it was supposed to be about, which was the idea that reviews were being, you know, that there was some kind of conspiracy that was leading to reviews being, I guess in a sense, compromised by contacts between game companies and the reviewers.
Now it's about vitriol and hate, I think, right? Are those the two?
We're treading dangerous territory here. I want to be really careful.
Yeah, well,
does seem like that it became okay, that somehow that became, when it worked, that it became okay to be a troll.
Well, you know.
Yeah, I don't agree with any of that.
Just take that out of the equation. It's the nature of the internet. People have opinions. People like to just counter those opinions with their own opinions, and it quickly degenerates into death threats and doxing and whatever. I can't even tell who's who anymore.
Well, if you were such a bozo, you would think that.
It's become a thing where it's just a beehive. if you really want to know what's going on in there and you want to, like, upset the beehive.
You can't look in there without changing everything. Yeah, without changing
Schrodinger's,
yourself.
It's Schrodinger's maelstrom.
Can't we just go back to picking on foodies again?
Well, actually,
yeah, see, foodies aren't going to dox you.
I thought you said furries.
They're not going to dox you either.
No, they're too busy. Yeah, everyone's Yipping. Also too busy doing other stuff. It's just this community has a lot of extra time on their hands. They like to, you know.
Well, you know, I think there's.
Hit low, swing low. Yeah, well, just, we shouldn't touch that.
I think
apparently
there's
the secret is don't read the comments.
Well, there's a danger in painting any group, including Gamergate, in too broad a brush. And that's, I mean, that's really the best way to
put
it.
You mean too large a pixel?
Yes, with too large a pixel. Yes.
Well, you know, there's just a lot going on, and there's a lot of noise on top of it. There are valid points all over the internet. It happens mm-hmm. all the time. And
there are a couple of out there, at least one or
and
two.
Like, I think Pete said it, you know, he's mentioned, don't read the comments. Like, you know, really a lot of what the scandal is online, whether it's about gay marriage or Hero or whatever, it's all the comments section. But if you can find the heart of the news, find the actual story, then you can make your own opinions about it. But once you start paying attention to all the background noise and all the chatter and stuff going around it, it's like I can't even enjoy YouTube anymore. If I accidentally scroll into the comment section, mm-hmm. it's like it's ruined.
Newspaper sites everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, they're actually the worst offenders, I think. IronCon.com gets pretty...
A couple of sites have turned
sometimes.
Off comments.
Oh, yeah, tons of
That's
them
the best way to do it, because there's nothing... There's,
it's not adding anything to the discussion. It's not an actual discussion.
The unfortunate part is how it drives out how have places that have to do that. You know, I would think that everybody, you know, at least on air on the show, has had the experience of being at some place where there was a really good discussion, where you learned stuff from people who had insights on the subject and had ways of looking at whatever it was that you know, that you hadn't thought of. You know, for instance, if you've seen most, like, Reddit AMAs are actually pretty good. It's pretty entertaining to read.
Oftentimes, when a community is empowered to police itself, it helps. If you've got any kind of website where you have a customer-facing or a public-facing, you know, comment section, if you are able to police it with
moderation system is nice.
Moderator, like with a set of moderators who are empowered to make changes, and you give the community some self-policing tools, upvotes, downvotes, the ability to report spam, stuff like that, it helps. But, I mean, to your point, like the comment sections on like local newspaper sites, any kind of local news site, it's like the story that you're reading could be like, you know, like third grade class holds bake sale, and the comments would be like,
oh, no,
"Obama is destroying America." Like,
no, it'll be race card, you know, sexual orientation card, general questioning of this country, and then it's just, you know, it's almost the exact same thing.
And there'll be like one dude who you're like, "Do you even have a job?" Because he posts 900 comments that are all wild conspiracy theory comments. Yeah. Oh, somebody's getting a call on our Google Hangout.
KPFT. Technology Bite speaking.
Is it?
Hello? How may we take your call?
Hello?
What is going on?
I think that's on. Just up on
Flick. I think somebody's trying to call Flick.
I think Flickdid's mom is calling.
Flickdid! Flickdid, did you take out the garbage?
Right now, people all over Houston are answering their ghost phone. We just shouldn't have said anything. Just let it play. Like,
Flickdid, it's your mother. I have a computer problem.
And your mother's British.
She's from New Zealand.
Hello, mate.
Flickdid, she said, answer that computer problem.
Who, is,
dox
who
you.
Is General Failure, and why is he reading my hard drive?
All hail Colonel.
But I'm bummed.
I don't know what you're saying.
A dingo stole my computer.
Hey, don't laugh. That's real. That really happens.
Wow. I did have a baby eat my dingo once.
Ew.
Not good. We missed that dingo.
All right.
Baby. It's a big baby.
Baby ate your dingo.
Oi. I don't even know
I'm
what
not
going to
miss this for a few weeks.
Yeah, you are.
Oh, we'll follow you.
All right. So
you'll find us in the comments section when you post your photos.
You could join the same Google Hangout that we're using for Pete.
Could,
I mean, What?
No dogs. That's good. Just mysterious voices. Halloween ghost children in the background. And the disembodied voice of what could be Pete's wife, or also another specter or spirit. It's hard to tell what's going on over there.
Spooky.
Man cow.
Man All right.
Cow, what?
Gearing up for Halloween.
So are you guys doing anything for Halloween?
Watching the weather report right now, it's like the Friday there's 100% chance of rain, and then that goes into Saturday, and so you wonder, is it going to quit early enough to be workable, or...
I wonder what's going on down here. I haven't even looked.
No,
I'm scared, Pete. Yeah. Hold me.
Could be a repeat of last weekend.
No, I don't think so.
Trick or treat will be knocked off. It's Patricia again, or whatever.
I'm hoping it's not a repeat of last weekend.
That was a fair amount of rain, I would say.
Did you get rained on, at least? Did you get some finally?
Down on my side of town, it rained, but we didn't flood or anything.
I was checking out a lot of the rain gauges. There is I guess it's the Harris County Flood Control District, but they put out like a live map that has like, I think it's refreshed every 10 seconds, rain gauges all throughout the city.
Yeah.
Measure up to the 100. That's new to me. I'd never seen that before this last week.
Yeah, there's
that was
also,
kind of fun to watch.
They also have video cameras on a lot of the bayous, and so you can go and check the levels of the bayous like with video.
Oh, that wow. So why didn't anyone go down there playing the bayous with their camera and be like, it's me?
Why didn't you go do it? I wasn't
available to go do it. Otherwise, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure
I didn't
enough.
Know about it either.
Having worked in the medical center and what happened in 2001 with Allison, yeah. I would, when it was raining scared. A lot, I would sometimes go check that site to look at the cameras.
Yeah, sure enough. I mean, it's looking like we here, it's looking like in Houston, we're going to get rain Friday night and Saturday morning. But not... It may be clear by Saturday evening, by Halloween evening here in Houston, but you may be in for it up in San Antonio.
And how's the traffic looking?
And we fly over in my helicopter.
I got 100% chance of rain on Saturday.
Yeah,
sure enough, but
rainy.
it does.
Well,
taper
according
off.
To ABC 13, it's 80% chance of rain.
Well, I use Weather Underground. So
yeah, I've got Weather Underground.
I'd rather
as well.
Get something addressed by a local meteorologist who's looking at our weather specifically instead of collecting historical data.
Well,
Weather Underground's kind of like that. They've got a lot of volunteer meteorologists that all feed in, and then you can actually feed in weather data. So they've got a little bit more weather data, I think, to grab from than other people do.
Could always ask Eric Berger, our own hometown weather guy.
When you say our own, that's got a different connotation.
He's still Houston. He actually has running at spacecityweather.com. He's running his own local forecast site now. It's actually pretty darn good. And sure enough, he's got an update on our Halloween storms, he says.
Spooky.
Well, I don't need storms on the day I'm flying out.
Are you taking off in the morning?
Evening
flight?
Oh, yeah,
you'll be fine.
You'll be fine.
You think?
Yeah.
You'd be all right.
All right.
I mean, unless, you know.
Unless you're not.
You know,
unless you're not.
Barring a gremlin on the wing, you're fine.
It's the weather. Anything could happen. It could change.
I don't like the weather. Anything can happen weather. All right. So, what are we going to do next? We have
Paul Hogan possibly calling out on line one.
Really?
Why is that? How do you say that?
Well, it's line one's beeping. Someone's That's calling. It might not be Paul Hogan. That's just wishful thinking.
After their unsuccessful attempt on Google Hangouts, they're calling in on the line.
Afflicted's mother still needs tech support.
You know, there's not tons of Apple news right now, but there is. So you know, the story is barely longer than the intro, but. The new Apple TV, you know, the tough thing is that Apple's gotten into, you know, pre-announcing stuff instead of, you know, the usual where they said, you know, at the end of the keynote, you can order, go to the Apple store online and order it kind of thing. Well, now they do it, you know, they pre-announce. The Apple TV became available for pre-orders online on Monday. And the good part about that instead of, unlike the you know, like the iPhone 6S where you had to go to Apple stores and all that kind of stuff, the new Apple TVs are going to be available in stores on Friday. So including, you know, basically, yeah, your Apple store is always going to have it. But there's also Best Buy is going to have new Apple TVs on hand. And so far, the people who've reviewed them have said, have had good things to say. Obviously, they're not cheap, but the reviews have been fairly positive. So there's that, and that's what we got for By the Apple
tonight.
I don't
like it being called Apple TV because I expect there to be a screen attached to it.
Yeah. Well,
you go look at an Apple TV, and it's just a little box.
That's always been the thing. Of course, now they're not doing their TV, even though they were for a long time. Apparently, they had one in development, but it's just not happening.
I couldn't figure out something cool enough to do. Well, the odd thing, you know, on screens in general for Apple, the thing that's sort of odd is, I mean, there's all those 5K iMacs and the 4K, you know, 21.5-inch iMac, but their external monitor, you know, to get 4K monitors for with your, you know, you buy the high-end, you know, Power Mac, you know, desktop, they don't offer any kind of high-res, high-quality external monitor right now. And at this point, it's been so long, you wonder, are they ever going to?
I mean, there's aftermarket monitors. There's third-party monitors that are of excellent quality. You can get a, I don't know. And the price points are relatively high, though. And that's kind of the thing. When people talk about how, oh, the 5K iMac, it's so overpriced or whatever, you got to remember you're getting essentially a $1,500 monitor along with that computer purchase.
Has it been determined if you can use that as a monitor when the computer goes bad?
You can't.
Whoa.
Apparently, yeah. He feels very passionately about that answer.
Yeah, really.
I thought you could use it in Thunderbolt display mode. Maybe
I thought the 27-inch 27-inch iMacs, you could use it as a monitor, I thought.
The 5K, I believe they...
Oh, that's right. Okay, no. You cannot use the 5K because...
proprietary somehow.
Because the maximum bandwidth of the DisplayPort spec available doesn't support enough, it's not wide enough to drive the entire display set of pixels, and on board inside on the logic board or the motherboard they have a customized DisplayPort connector that they had to build that has extra lanes in it for the GPU to be able to drive the display internally. So no, you cannot use it at full 5K res as an external monitor. So,
although the thing that's kind of interesting, if you're, you know, wanting to go hardcore with it, if you get a 5K iMac, you can buy one of these. You can buy like a 27-inch 4K, like a Dell 4K monitor, and it'll drive that.
Yeah. Well, and it'll look hella good too.
So, and that was, you know, just the, you know, it's not part of the news, but, I do know that recently there have been deals on the Dell 4K monitor that it does, you know, one of the things on 4K monitors is look for the refresh rate.
I was just about to say, yep.
Because there's some 30 Hertz refresh rates that's a little slow and painful for most things that you would do. The good ones have 60 at least. And, The Dell special that was on that I saw today was like $450, which isn't bad. And it was an IPS display and that. That's not a gaming. You're not going to do gaming on it, I don't think. But because it's not really quick enough for that. But that kind of stuff is coming out.
Mm-hmm. Some kind of disturbance going on in the booth. What are you laughing at in there?
Minecraft.
It's like a door opening in Minecraft.
It's like the door opening on the Yahoo Instant Messenger.
There you go.
Contact.
There you go.
Yeah. Or was that Yahoo or AOL? What made the exit sound?
It was AOL.
It was AOL.
Slamming door.
Yeah. Was it AOL?
It was AOL.
I think so. Or maybe it was
AOL chat.
I think
or ICQ.
So, yeah.
No, ICQ.
Might have been ICQ. Wah!
And Lycos used to have a dog barking, right?
ICQ used to have like the train noise whenever someone was signing in. Scare the hell out of you.
I had a 5-digit ICQ number.
I did not. I had a 6-digit one. A 6-digit ICQ number and a 6-digit /.
That's why I don't ICQ you. 6-digit /, even?
I do have a 6-digit slash dot.
I've got a 5. I think.
I know. It's, I'm not cool enough to hang with this game.
That's why we've got to keep /.
Jay's got ketchup invites.
I also have Gmail invites if anybody.
Hey, back in the day, that was hot property.
That was.
Yeah, Google Plus as well.
That was a big deal.
Well, yeah, Google Plus. Remember all those people who were just desperate to get Google Plus invites?
That was one of those people. Is it going to take
that
off?
That never happened.
Yeah, no, Google Plus is going to...
Google Plus has turned into MySpace. I'm getting... added by weird.
Weird. No, same here. I don't
everywhere.
Know these people. I'm like, I don't. I'm not doing anything. It's almost the point where more
it's a one way. It's not. It doesn't. It's not a two sided transaction like Facebook.
For a couple of years, and they were doing this right about. So I signed on to Ars. I started working at Ars Technica at the end of 2012, and for several years before, and for a year or so after. In order for this was so scummy of them, I think. In order for your author picture to appear when Google News scraped your stories off of whatever websites you work for, and they would, in order for them to display a picture of you, correct, by the copy of the story that they'd scraped, you had to have a Google Plus profile with your work email address and a link in the Google Plus profile to the website that you work at and an accurate photo in there. And then you had to like go to some kind of form that Google had and submit that account in, and then it would link on their back end. And only after that would they show your picture next to the news stories that you'd written that they'd scraped. And like they made every journalist do it, and it was just one more hostage way that they forced Google Plus onto you.
Thought there was going to be a fifth of rum and like a live chicken involved.
No. They didn't go that far, fortunately. You didn't have to do the voodoo rituals or anything like that. But yeah, you had to go do all this stuff. So yeah, now I ended up with a Google Plus account that I've used for literally nothing except as an image placeholder so I can have my picture show up next to news stories that I write, which is so dumb. And it was just a terrible... The forcing of Google Plus on everybody is a terrible, terrible thing.
Well, that's the only way you're going to get it out there.
Well, I know, but they went too far. I mean, I
wanted the adoption to be a lot better. I just think that Facebook, as far as timing went, they got in there and got a whole new generation of users, or multiple generations, older generations now, that have not used to having to move up shop and switch social media platforms every few years. And this is the longest I've been anywhere on Facebook. It feels weird. Like, we've been here for, like, Facebook 6, 7, 8, 9 years now.
Well, ever since it opened up from colleges, which is almost a decade ago, I think. I think it was in 2005? I guess it has been 10 years.
Yeah. Whereas, it's starting to remind me of things like, hey, look what happened a decade ago.
With Google Plus, rather than saying, oh, you don't want to come over here? Well, let's add additional value and tempt you. They were like, oh, you don't want to come over here? Well, we'll just tie this to everything that you use
and force you
to create an account. Oh,
you're already there, actually, is more of the tagline. Oh, no, you're already there. We put you there.
You like YouTube? Oh, well, guess what? Now you have a Google Plus account that you have to use.
I do kind of like that together, but I still have like all these. I finally stopped... You're telling YouTube, no, I don't want to connect my accounts because I had the YouTube account and I had all these different things. But they're finally folded into one. But for like 2 years, I clicked no.
I clicked no, and now they don't ask anymore. I make new accounts for everything. I'm a firm believer in segregation of services. All your services should be separate.
Well, I will say this. I'm a lot more amenable to logging in with my Google credentials than in my Facebook credentials. Like, I don't like logging into sites with Facebook.
OAuth?
Yeah, with OAuth
sites.
Like OAuth 2. Like, I trust Google's OAuth 2 a little bit more than I trust Facebook single sign-on or whatever they're calling it.
If I'm given a choice on an OAuth provider, I'll use Twitter as my first choice. Because they have a validation.
Unless he's trolling, then he uses Google Plus.
They have a validation and an unvalidation system that I like and I think is easy to use.
Passwords are 140 characters or less.
But if I am given the option of not using OAuth, I will pick a local account every single time. Every time. Because I want to be able to generate a one-off email address I can sign up with so that I can kill that email address if I need to.
Also, it tells you who's giving your stuff
away.
It tells you who's giving your stuff away,
and it also means that, I mean, I know OAuth is tokenized, and so a compromise doesn't necessarily mean anything, but having that absolute segregation and not tying into any other account, I just like that. I like everything I do, every piece should be in a little box by itself, and if necessary, I can take a compromised box and throw it into the fire without having to worry about anything.
Don't breathe
the sad thing on the Google. The sad thing on the Google Plus versus Facebook thing is, Google Plus did have some good ideas that Facebook has still kind of not really adopted. The ability to put people into groups and to be able to post sort of, you know, to share what you want to share more easily with particular groups and kind of segment your social media following. You know, Facebook is still never really, you can do it, but it's kind of a pain in the rear.
Yeah,
you got to know what you're doing.
They lack granularity still. I like the, you know, I don't want everything I send out to go to, like, you know, for instance, you know, but the same post, I may not want it to go to my mom and an office worker and someone I hung out with doing, you know, hackery stuff over the weekend. Like, those need to be segregated. Because my mom's going to come on everything no matter what.
You should do hackery stuff with your mom.
It's well, no. Most involved of my hackery stuff is on G+. Like, so I do my technical stuff on Google with, you know, circles that I control. And then I do, you know, my public, like, ooh, look where I am kind of stuff on Facebook.
So you just wonder, you know, is Facebook, now they've basically gotten to the point where as long as they don't screw up super badly and alienate people, they're kind of the default. They seem to have gotten over that hump that MySpace couldn't go over.
Like AOL.
Where something better could supplant it.
If anyone kills Facebook, though, I think it's going to be the users that kill Facebook. So unfortunately, this is one thing. Like the content, the quality of content, even though there's barely any content on Google+, the quality of that, that's actually people doing stuff. Facebook is kind of devolved into a reshare meme, look at this article, you know, kind of like that. It's just a bunch of reposts of kitty pictures. Not entirely, but that's
kitten. Let me be clear.
Yes. I was totally clear. I wasn't thinking anything else. But it's much more sharing jokes and much more links to other articles with, you know, a line than it is like a lot of original content. People saying like Jay Lee does a really good job with trip write ups and, you know, putting things out there. Most other people, it's just like it's a link to this, it's a link to that. It's not a lot.
No,
of
I know. I mean,
content.
A lot of it is, you know, there's content creators and content consumers, and it always kind of kills me because I'll actually create an image that's some kind of meme image or a joke, or I'll tell a joke that I've made up or something, and like I always hate it when people, where'd you get that from?
my brain.
You know, so I mean, yeah, but I get it. That's how it is. You know, I like social media well enough. I enjoy interacting on it. I don't do anything. What I really hate is people that just decide that they need to change the world, you know, by linking to some kind of poll or boycott or something. It's just, you're not going to change any minds on Facebook, as far as I know.
Where'd you get that from, Jay?
Except that maybe Barrett's mom won't trust him as much.
Barrett's mom.
Yeah, I think she did.
Hey, Barrett's mom.
What's happening?
We should have Flicted and Barrett's mom come on the show.
That'd be
on
awesome.
Mother's Day.
Oh,
wouldn't that be awesome? All right. Well, that music tells me and tells you and tells everyone in the studio.
Stop talking about our moms.
Shut up. We're gonna take a short break and come back after some station business. So let's do some station business so we can get right back to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Drew House.
Cool.
Celebrate the Day of the Dead. The celebration of the Day of the Dead is a ritual that symbolizes the alliance of life and death and generates transcendence. This celebration has its origin in the pre-Columbian era and has endured for more than 3,000 years until today. Ancient cultures celebrate it in the ninth month of the Aztec calendar under the vigilance of the duality of transcendent deities. Come and share with us this ancient tradition at KPFT Pacifica Radio, 419 Levitt Boulevard, November 1st, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. On November 1st, we invite you to participate in the setting up of an altar for the dead and to spend that afternoon listening to poetry, singing, and dancing. Again, that's Sunday, November 1st, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at 419 Levitt Boulevard. KPFT, Houston.
show, you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
And now back to Technology Bites.
All right, so we were talking in the studio while all that other stuff was going on, and we were trying to firm up the lineup for the coming 3 weeks, you know, where I'll be gone.
Forever.
So, Pete, are you coming to Houston?
Yes.
For any of them or all of them?
All of them.
All of them.
All
of them. Wow.
So, saved by the Pete.
So
you might be able to take a break at least one of those.
I don't have to show up at all. Pete can just run this whole thing Iron Man style.
Yeah, because that's what everybody wants is to just have me talk for the entire show. I guess I'll just turn it into a fun drive.
Oh, that reminds me.
No.
Yes.
Be careful of what that reminds
Winter
you
sizzling?
Of.
No. Somebody... And, of course, now my internet decides to stop working. We had a pledge came in via the web for, like, you
$5?
Know. $5? No, like $250.
Oh, whoa.
Like
whoa.
So let me.
Thank you.
Magical donation person.
Somebody just decided to go by the web page and made a web pledge.
Awesome.
And we want to thank Philip, who is a returning member. He made a pledge on the web. I got told a day ago, so sometime last week.
Wow.
So like no fundraiser. I don't think they're going
to
give us a credit.
I was about to say, can we assume that Philip meant for that to go to our next?
Yeah.
No, that's fine.
Philip, thank you anyway.
We love you anyway, Philip.
The station loves you. But that's still cool
spirit,
that people
though,
think of us,
yeah.
You know, and make their budget. So next week you're here. Everybody's
uh-huh.
here. I'm not here. Pete.
Except you.
Lee. Maybe Dwight. Dwight's iffy whether or not he can make it to come in to play with us. But then on the 11th,
I will be in Boston.
You'll be gone.
But
we have a special guest.
Yes.
We'll have a special guest.
Got to wave Dwight off on that.
Are we keeping
like no?
Are we keeping
no,
the
Dwight,
special
no.
guest secret?
No, I don't.
Well, are we?
I'm not.
Are we? Okay.
Why?
I don't want to be the one to rule.
If we don't have the guest necessarily lined up, do we?
No, he's. I mean, he's confirmed. Oh,
Stephen Hawking is going to be on the show.
Yeah.
On the no, hold on.
Jesus Christ.
No, it's. No.
The ghost of Breit Martin.
That would be a neat trick.
The ghost of Wink Martindale. Who? Who did you say? Breitbart? What did you say?
Breitbart.
No, we're going to have formerly the Chronicle Sci Guy, now working for Ars Technica, Eric Berger will be on the show as our special guest. May end up having to do a if it's just me and Eric.
Well,
on
Pete's
that
coming
day.
In. He said he's coming in.
That's right, Pete's coming in. I was going
to listen to our show.
If it was just me and Eric. It would just be like an all space show.
So Eric, so Eric Berger, right? He like left the Chronicle, right?
Yeah.
And so now, like, to get his weather information, does he just like stick his finger in his mouth and get it wet and hold his finger up? Like, didn't he lose access to all that stuff?
No, Eric is still running. Eric is still running.
I don't think the Chronicle has their own meteorological.
Noah is publicly available to everybody.
He's still running.
He collects data from where we all collect it from. Weatherbug.
Facebook.
that's what I'm saying. Don't you have to have some kind of subscription to special Doppler radars and stuff?
He's an actual meteorologist, and he's running a website.
Yeah, but don't you have to pay for it?
He just goes outside.
Noah. Or Weather Underground, actually. You can get a lot of that data.
He's subpoenaed under the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah, the Freedom of Weather Act. Anyway, yes, he's still running a local weather forecast site. It's called spacecityweather.com. Feel free to go there. It's awesome forecasting. Eric's a great guy. I would trust him for weather before I would trust just about anybody else. And he's really good at it, too, especially if there's any kind of tropical storm shenanigans going on. He's the guy for years and years who I've read to, you know, see what's going on for real without, you know, having to deal with the Geraldo-style reporting.
Like when he stood outside in galoshes in a puddle and said it was... It was flooding.
That was Geraldo. Geraldo did that.
So forever, he was the Kron Sci guy on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And when the announcement came out that he was leaving the Chronicle to go to work for Ars, somebody cyber squatted Ars Sci guy.
Yeah.
It's gone now, but somebody squatted that one.
Little known secret, he actually doesn't use Data at all. He's just got a touch of rheumatism in his left knee, and he interprets it. That
well,
and chicken
sad,
entrails.
I'm not be Magic here 8 Ball. I think that's going to be an awesome show.
Well, he lives down in Clear Lake, so we could do another one if he likes it.
I would
it.
Call
so,
in for the show from Boston.
I deliberately
but...
agreed to come be on the show that I wasn't going to be here. I'm taking it personal. Thanks for that, Eric. Burger. Hello, Eric is this Burr. Eric Burger?
Eric
Burger. So yes, that
will
be John
Houseman name.
So on the 11th.
So it'll be all weather, all space, all the time.
Word. Space weather.
Space weather. In space burgers. No one could predict the rain.
What? And then the week after that, I don't know, we'll be all leftovers and we'll all be tired. And then the week after that, when Jay's back, we're all going to call in sick.
Can you guys talk about Comet Lovejoy? I think that's awesome.
When is that space junk supposed to hit Sri Lanka?
I don't know.
Oh,
I thought it was Shreveport.
No, there's supposed to be like a 7-meter-wide piece of space junk that they don't know the origin of, maybe as far back as Apollo days. It was on like the backside of the moon or something that's going to like spin down, come in, and it's supposed to hit like off the coast of Sri Lanka, like I think next week or something.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, the Comet Lovejoy.
It's Skylab all over again.
It's too much for me.
There's a comet called Lovejoy.
The cool part is the code name... It's called the WTF space object because the code name for or the you know this designation was WT1190F, so of course it quickly became WTF1190. It says it's next month that they think.
Oh, it's next month. Okay. Yeah. Well, but next month is like only 3 or 4 days away.
Yeah. Da-da-da. Sunday. No, there's a comic called
true.
Lovejoy.
Well, and what we're talking about.
Let Barrett talk.
They think it'll be sometime on November 13th.
It's going to crash into New Zealand and destroy the entire island.
Have your camera ready.
Click. Quick, upload to the clock.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have one of those little Wi-Fi modules so that you can at least get the picture off before you're disintegrated?
I don't know what the broadband is like in New Zealand.
So, you know, there's this comet, Lovejoy.
I was
hoping
somebody would bring that up. I was hoping somebody mentioned Comet Lovejoy. God, you think we would just buy
it? Well, I wanted them to talk about it in a week so I could listen to it later. But no, there's a comet. I guess it got named a little while ago, but it's named Lovejoy because it spews out in its tail alcohol, like the actual same kind of alcohol that we could drink, and sugars and all kinds of weird stuff. So it's like the party comet. So if you're like stuck in space and had to like go, you know, like
you had
go
to
do
choose
some R&R,
between the planet of water down, and the comet of alcohol.
Yeah, go get
like
the
if you were
going to
be a rocket, man.
That's all.
Now
I don't know if it was worth
Major
worth
Tom.
So is Eric Burger, or he's the space correspondent for Ars Technica now?
That is correct. His title is Senior Space Editor.
Oh, he should be Space Cadet.
Space guy.
Make it
to
the bottom.
Can't be Senior and Space Cadet.
So is it all of space, everything having to do with space, like heavenly bodies and comets and all that, or is it just space travel and
will he be going to space?
Yes, he will be working from space.
Are you guys going to make him wear a red jersey on his first couple
of whatever
away
he wants because he will be
is
alone.
Ours paying for him to do the vomit comet and stuff like
no,
that?
No, he's just sticking his finger down his
throat.
It's a lot cheaper.
Let me tell you, I actually tried to get a ride on the vomit comet in 2013. Yeah,
tell us what the vomit. Tell our listeners.
So what we're talking, the vomit comet is more properly called the reduced gravity aircraft.
That's the comet that comes after the comet Lovejoy.
Yes, thank you. Now it's the reduced gravity aircraft, and it is it's various kinds of planes over the years, but it's basically a large airliner with the inside kind of stripped out and replaced with a bunch of padding that NASA flies in really high parabolas, and so they'll put astronaut trainees or experiments or both.
Or millionaires.
Or millionaires who pay for it onto there, and they'll take off and they'll fly really high up and then sort of crest and then fly down for a little while and then
at
scoop
the same
and fly
speed
again,
in which
and...
you would fall. Yeah, hopefully the padding is absorbent.
And you weigh almost nothing. You feel like you weigh almost
there's,
nothing.
So the
and
the
then you feel
is,
like you weigh a whole lot.
Yeah, you get about, you get... On a regular NASA mission, I think they do 50 or so parabolas. So you get approximately 50 30-ish second sessions of weightlessness followed by 50 like acceleration periods where you're climbing back up again. And it's called the Vomit Comet because they said about 1/3 of the people who ride it get violently ill. 1/3 of the people who go up on it experience some nausea, and then the remaining third are like totally fine. So, and I think probably the 1/3 that experiences some minor nausea is from the first third who are vomiting all over the place, because like they don't like
once the first third takes out the second third.
Once
probably.
You start getting sick, they don't like land the plane for you. Like you're in it for the next like hour as they keep doing all of this stuff. I mean you're
we're
not
gonna turn up the heat for y'all.
No, the procedure is they have people. So I mean they've got a fair number of people on the thing who are like crewing it. And the procedure is if you start to get super duper sick,
they have
like
one guy with a big thing of Saran wrap and he just wraps it around your head.
Well, they take you to the back of the plane and they'll strap you in to kind of like a sleeping bag kind of thing so you can just sort of sit there
all gag
just in misery with a sick bag for like the whole next hour.
Ruin it for everybody.
So anyway, you tried to get
Yeah, so yes, I tried to get a ride. They do have press slots. No, junkets. They'll have press slots on some of the flights, NASA does. But there was some kind of agreement that I couldn't like they had to like if you're going to if press are going to fly on the flight, they'll just let you on. You have to like cover one of the experiments that's running on the flight. And in order to do that, the research institution that's sponsoring that particular experiment has to agree to let you cover
it. It's kind of like a sponsored kind of thing.
It's sort of like, that's how like you like finger quotes pay your way on as press. You have to report on not just like, woo, I'm flying zero gravity. You have to actually report on one of the things there.
I'm flying at zero gravity awesome. With this beehive.
Yeah. Well, and for us, it was the one that they had paired us up with was from a major, university, and it was some kind of botany experiment. And the university was basically like, this is a tech publication that knows nothing about botany. No. And so then NASA was like, all right, well, you're not flying and please don't ever ask again. Cause once they say no, you're done.
Really?
Yeah. So unfortunately that was like my one chance. It was crushed by academia. Was not able to discover which one of the three categories of Vomit Comet flyers that I
maybe you could get up on the ISS and do a story on like killer bacteria and all that.
You know, for only $20 million, I could. They'll let you fly.
I took my headphones off for 30. We didn't talk about it on the news, did we? The killer bacteria. It's not killer, but all the bacteria aboard the ISS.
No.
Yeah,
no.
There's a ton of it. Apparently, it's coming off people's skin, and they didn't really know that it was growing up there. So they started checking the HEPA filters, and there is a lot of just small bacteria floating around. A lot of them are primed for being able to come in and be carriers of like other infectious diseases.
Oh, that's lovely.
And you threw on top of that space disease, highly infectious space disease, and you couple them with that the immune systems of the astronauts are ever so slightly diminished because of cosmic radiation, lack of exercise.
Wasn't this a book by Michael Crichton, and didn't terrible things happen?
Probably. This just came out. So they're announcing like, hey, we have an issue, but I don't know if they know what to do about it yet. So it's actually
wasn't it a Ren and Stimpy cartoon where they get the space madness?
Oh, yes. That's very true.
No, there's going to come a time when they're going to send somebody to the space station and say, really wouldn't be prudent to bring you back right now.
Right. Just why don't you stay up there for another year or so?
We're sending a chihuahua and a cat up to install a button that you're to never press because it will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, couldn't they just, open the doors and...
Couldn't they air it out?
Air it out. Yeah, just thinking.
Or vacuum it out.
There are lots of tardigrades are the big ones. The tardigrade.
Tardigrades.
Which I like, it just sounds like TARDIS.
I like tardigrades. Tardigrades are cool.
They look like the water bears.
Yeah, the water bears. Yeah, yeah. The thing about water bears is that they can live or they exist in a dormant state, which is like death forever. And then you can like we were in a museum in Munich, and there was a scientist there who had an electron microscope, and he was showing like he took this moss stuff and put it in some water and then just kind of messed with it, and this water bear just kind of came to life in the water.
It
was very strange, but he had some great photos. He has a great photo that either he took or someone took of a water bear on top of a grain of pollen. They're very fascinating. If you do a search on water bears, and the images are incredible. These things are very complex.
That's like a Libra.
A Libra?
Yeah, it's one of the zodiac signs, right? A water bearer.
Oh.
Oh, that's an Aquarius.
That's an Aquarius, but okay.
Aquarius bear.
Or if you really want to look, if you do a search for water bear and then go to images, the images are incredible. For
this isn't
things.
This isn't a dirty, dirty, dirty way. Okay. No, I guess it's only dirty if you're another water bear.
It's a little tardigrade.
Well, there you can find water bears so in some bars in Houston, but that's not what Jay's talking about.
Whatever you're into, I guess. But so these things are in the space station.
They're not like that, but there is something
they're also,
very closely related to that.
They're also called moss piglets.
Moss piglets?
Yes.
You get some tartabacon from them.
What?
Tartabacon?
Tartabacon? I love it.
Where the phrase no moss came from?
No moss!
No moss.
See, they're finding a lot of fungus, and the main thing is an actinobacteria. And it's a phylum which actually other things can glom on and just get ugly.
Well, I mean, whatever this is like the water bear, they speculate that the tardigrades could survive.
Yeah, they can survive in space, yeah.
So it's not like it could just depressurize the whole thing. And
so they've commissioned Elon Musk to build a ship that can send up 400 gallons of bleach.
Wow.
And then the space CSI comes around and puts their light on there. And, yeah.
Well, they said that they could check the station for the bacteria with black lights, and none of the astronauts would agree to it.
The inside of the space station. No. All right. Let's
what else are they going to do on orbit?
Science.
This is more dangerous than Gamergate.
here we go.
In the world of technology, new things come out every day. Our judges will decide whether to try, buy, or fry.
Well, I'm sure you noticed I didn't get a chance to do the...
Notice I wasn't going to say anything. I was just going to sit here and be unhappy.
I figured that'll be fried. Well, we'll have it. See, this way we can run it for weeks while you're not
you're
here. So
the best shows
that.
Ever.
Oh my gosh, you got all kinds of things under the try by fry section.
Oh yeah, there was all kinds of neat stuff to throw out there. Here's one that's very timely. If you have not picked out your Halloween costume and you're trying to figure out, well, one thing is you can figure out how totally unimaginative you are, or you can find something that's not as trendy. There's a site called Frightgeist that is powered by Google Trends. And it's at Fright. It's spelled like you would expect. FrightGeist. Frightgeist.withgoogle, all spelled out, .com. And you can look up the it shows the searches, what people are searching for as far as costume ideas in local area and nationally.
Well,
apparently, like Las Vegas, the top costume search is, of course, Harley Quinn.
That's an awesome.
And so that could, fortunately, it does not. It's not tied to Google Plus, so it does not tell you that most of those are guys. But
well, it looks like
anyways.
Pete checking on the Houston area here. The top locally trending costume in Houston is also Harley Quinn, followed by Batman, followed by pirate, then superhero. And then, of course, my favorite costume of all time in fifth place, Star Wars.
Star Wars!
I remember when I dressed up like Star Wars last year.
Everybody.
And last, the least popular, is Technology Bites radio host.
That's what I'm going as.
That Harley Quinn is like Martha Quinn, medicine woman on a motorcycle.
Martha Quinn, medicine woman.
So that's one. It's free, so you can try it.
What's a diorama?
So that's the thing. You go to any comic book convention nowadays, and there's at least a dozen Harlequins.
What's a diorama?
I bet you to look at mine first.
choose you.
Make it so.
Go banana.
Go banana. references.
Oh, you guys crack yourselves up.
Yeah.
Well, so next item with all the Star Wars stuff coming up, what is a Star Trek fan to do? Where are you going to get new episodes of Star Trek content? Well, there's these two guys, Andrew Hussey and Jan van Dem Hemel. I'm sure I'm butchering every one of his 20 names, made about 36 amusing vignettes out of old Star Trek The Next Generation footage. It's called Tea with John Luke, and essentially they've taken bits of footage from various Next Generation episodes and basically focused entirely on Jean-Luc Picard ordering tea or things related to tea. And they've done more than that. They've edited in stuff.
How do you
try, buy, or fry this?
How do you try, buy, or fry this product? Is it
You can go to YouTube and search for Tea with Jean-Luc.
There's a whole series of these.
There are links to all of our stuff. All the things we talk about during the show tonight are up on the web at geekradio.com. So you can follow the link for the Tea with Jean-Luc.
Yeah, so I was going to say, Pete, there's a whole series of these things. These edits by these two guys. This is number 40 in the series, I think. Not all of them are even remotely safe for work. Most of them are hilarious, but you know, viewer beware.
Only slightly cleaner than the comments in the Chronicle.
Some of them are
on the article that we posted. They have one embedded, and it is one that is safe for work.
Yes, yeah. The Tea with Jean-Luc is.
No,
but don't look any deeper.
But some of them are just anything involving data painting is absolutely not safe for work. Watch out for those.
I don't know.
They edited in new content, I guess, is another piece to put with this.
I don't know if there's thought that when I was in college, I actually happened across a set of coffee cups. And they turned out to be the exact same ones that are used on Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Did you buy them?
No. I mean, I'd already had them, and Jean-Luc Picard is using, in the forward lounge or whatever it's called, the forward deck. Where do they hang out?
Ten forward.
Thank you.
Come on, man.
I know it's been a while. They're hanging out in ten forward,
good buddy.
Drinking from the same cups, and the brand I think is Bodum, BODUM, where you can probably go find those on eBay, or they were out there. And this was probably like late '90s, mid '90s. They were still producing them. I think I broke on all but two.
The
of mine.
French presses.
No, it was they were.
They basically,
so Bodum
they,
makes
they
French
sold
press.
Them as a kit with. A lot of them went out with French presses.
Yeah,
but,
you
it's
get them
that like beaker-looking glass with a plastic handle that went around it, and so you can hold it without
very
it being
futuristic.
Yeah,
you could buy just
French
the cups
press,
or
right?
the no. They, well, the French okay. They, the company makes French presses, but in addition to the French press, they would also sell the cups. They were stylistically looked like the French presses at the time. So if you look in his hand, actually, on the pictures that Pete has linked, that is the exact same little coffee cup.
So okay, but it's a French press, right?
So it's the people that made the French press, but it was actually mugs.
Yeah, it was
that like their French press.
They also made little stirrers. They made a whole lot of other stuff too.
But there was a French press, right?
There's also a French press. Hey, there's this comet.
And it's not named after Reverend Lovejoy from The Simpsons, just to tie all the other references together.
No, that would
right?
be really cool, though.
Would be.
I don't know when. I think Lovejoy was probably named 50 years ago to 120 years ago.
The Simpsons hasn't been
big,
on that
wide
long.
Open. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Although it seems like it sometimes.
I mean, The Simpsons predicted things that were even before the show happened. That's
I think
amazing.
That was the New Zealand version of The Simpsons.
The Simpsons predicted 9/11.
Easy now.
I don't know, they may have if you go deep enough and can come up with some symbolism that's deep enough.
All right, so now one rings the, again, it's Matt Groening.
Now we've got some free ones out of the way. Here's the more serious one. You know, standing desks are all the rage now, but, you know, and then the ones, you know, so that's a big deal. Then the next thing is sort of the one that adjusts between a sitting down desk and a standing up desk. But if you want to go farther than that, you need the desk that you can even lay down flat and work on it while you're laying on your back. It looks like, if you go to the link from geekradio.com, it kind of looks like a very futuristic dental chair with a computer attached
Except
to
your
it.
Computer mouse keeps falling and hitting you in the head.
Ouch!
Yeah, I didn't want to do that, man. Just taking a phone to the noggin is bad enough at midnight.
Actually, there's something they do with it. They use magnets to keep the... to keep the keyboard, mouse, and mouse pad from falling on your face when you're on your recline.
So I work on servers too, so I wouldn't want to take a Dell PowerEdge 2950 to the forehead.
So it's got a 27 inch monitor on it, and let's see. So it's got an arm that holds your screen, and it has the desk piece extends out so you can get up from the chair and work standing up on the side. It is not inexpensive, I'll say that. There's an early adopter price of around $4,000, and the regular price will be around $6,000. But you do get to like work. You can work while laying on your back.
I'm working.
Their next model is one that has three axes of freedom, three rings inside each other. You can spin around uncontrollably while you work on your computer.
It's the Vomit Comet desk, and that, but it keeps your heart rate up, and so you're not worrying about the whole sedentary thing. Well, and now, of course, your other alternative is you go, that's too expensive, I can build my own, and you get some duct tape and some PVC pipe and attach all this stuff to your favorite recliner.
But you can get all that at S-Smart, which reminds me, the Evil Dead is coming back
only
on Halloween.
Only if you shop smart.
Yeah.
Shop smart. Shop S-Smart.
That's kind of something to look forward to on Halloween. That's kind of a geek. I don't know if it's a geeky thing, but most people I know that are kind of geeky, they all like, you know, the Evil Dead. Especially the last one. I think that was the last one.
Was it?
I prefer Bubba Hotep.
Excellent movie.
Yes.
Highly underrated.
Yeah, so Ash comes back in a television series versus coming back to the big screen. And
Ash,
I think he's
versus the Evil Dead.
Ash versus the Evil Dead. And I think he's like currently, he's like middle-aged, past middle-aged. He's like, you know, Bruce Campbell, currently aged now. In his current shape. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I just finished watching The X-Files, which I had never watched.
Like all the way through
all
of them?
I watched all of them.
I just watched them.
No, well, I had to stop in the middle because season 5 of Walking Dead came out on Netflix. I had to go watch all those and then come back to it. But I finished watching Twin Peaks, and I got to the end, and I was like, I waited like 30 years to see the ending of this.
When you watched The X-Files all the way through, did you find it weird how, like,
spoiler!
Oh, no, sorry. I said X-Files. I meant Twin Peaks.
You said X-Files.
You said X-Files.
I've never watched The X-Files.
Good. That's a lot of work.
Wait.
Before this gets away from us, what was the question you were going to ask about finding weird?
I was going to ask if the trajectory of the show took you by surprise, how it was quirky and then got amazing and then ended terribly.
X-Files?
Yeah.
But he wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know.
Of course, that particular description applies to so many shows, Lee.
Quirky, then amazing, then terrible.
See, Twin Peaks did that in only two seasons.
Twin Peaks started off so great, and then you kept rooting for it to be great.
I got to the end, and I was like, really? Like, okay, I'm going to look this up just because I want to see what people...
David Lynch, though.
I know. I kind of figured that would happen, but I was really hoping TV had reined him in enough that it would be...
It's David Lynch, though.
Sensible.
No. So, I mean, the big question of the show, who killed Laura Palmer? Because I remember being in, like, seventh grade, and
that was the big question of the first season.
But, like... The answer, as I've asked tons of people who have watched the show, and maybe you can explain it, whenever
yet.
I ask, like, so, who did kill Laura Palmer? It's always like this 30-minute-long explanation that never makes any sense.
Well, that was the correct answer, but it's more complex than that. But yes, his answer was correct.
The dancing little person involved, too.
Well, the thing about Twin Peaks, for me at any rate, was... that watching it when it actually happened is way more... It's like seeing Star Wars in 1977.
Yeah. That's what anybody was talking about.
Well, and it was challenging the boundaries of television. David Lynch, I had a lot of respect for the stuff that he was doing, what he did to television. So many of the ideas that were born in Twin Peaks got carried into other shows and executed maybe in some cases a little better and in some cases...
I mean, I could even still... I mean, the thing is, I kind of have a love-hate thing with David Lynch. Like, there's aspects of what he does that I really love, but I feel like sometimes he intentionally makes things nonsensical.
Agreed.
Just to make things nonsensical, and that annoys me a little bit.
It's David Lynch.
I think just to sort of like, look, I'm being this way to the watchers at home.
Well, I think sometimes he doesn't want. And so sometimes after I finished Twin Peaks, I'm like, I'm going to go read a little bit about this because I remember the Who Killed Laura Palmer thing. And so evidently in real time, and if you were watching it real time, you might remember this. They said that what happened kind of was.
No, I was in seventh grade. And my mom let me watch the show.
Jay, he was like in his 30s, right? Maybe.
Somewhere around there.
Anyway.
He's going looking for the dates.
It was in 91, 92, I think. So when it first came out, the big thing was Who Killed Laura Palmer, and everybody was all into that. It was weird for TV, but it attracted a lot of people because it was very unique, but it was still accessible. And everybody got into it. But then the thing is, they never told you who killed Laura Palmer, like throughout the entire first season, and everybody was like, started getting frustrated with it. And then in the second season, they were like, well, surely it's, again, they're getting more and more frustrated. People are starting to leave, losing interest in the show. So in the like seventh episode of the second season, they reveal who killed Laura Palmer. And then it just continued to lose viewers. So by the time it got to the end of the second season, plus it kind of got weird and started meandering.
But did you try the pie?
The pie looked pretty good.
You gotta try the pie.
And the coffee.
And the coffee.
I like the way that the main agent guy would talk to his recorder, to his secretary back. There's a lot of just little snippets from that that are quite good. And then, oh, God, what's the...
Diane.
Yeah, Diane.
There was definitely good stuff in it. I mean, I did watch the entire two seasons. I thought there was some very good stuff in it. But, yeah, the ending was a little Cheryl frustrating. So then I went and was reading about it, and it turns out that they put out a Blu-ray version of it, and there was like 90 minutes of additional footage that was cut from the movie because everybody thought the movie that came out a couple years later was going to explain everything, and it didn't. And then people were like, oh, there's this 90 minutes. This 90 minutes is going to explain everything. And, of course, now that people listening, of course, it did not. So, but then they said that Frost and Lynch, their concept actually was that you start off this question with this mystery of this one question, but the more you learn, the further away from the answer you get. And to the general populace, that was cool for about 5 episodes.
Yeah. It's like, hey, how can we really frustrate watchers at home? Oh, I know.
Well, I cannot see Miguel Ferrer, who played Agent Rosenfeld on that. I cannot see that actor without thinking about Agent Rosenfeld to this day. And he has the best quote from the whole show. It says, now you listen to me. While I admit to a certain cynicism, the fact that I am a naysayer and a hatchetman in the fight against violence, I pride myself in taking a punch and I'll gladly take another because I choose to live my life in the company of Gandhi and King. My concerns are global. I reject absolutely revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love, and I love you, Sheriff Truman.
I am a hacker. This is my manifesto.
That was one of the weirdest moments was him and Truman were sitting in the office. And I assume this was ad-lib, but who knows, because it was Lynch, so he could have told them to do it. But they were sitting there talking to each other, and I think they got to the end of their lines, and they're just kind of sitting there looking at each other. And then all of a sudden, I don't remember which one it was. I'm pretty sure it was Agent Cooper, like, smiled and reached over and, like, went boop and, like, tapped him on the nose. And they left. I think that was probably ad-libbed, and they just he left it in. But it was very weird.
I wanted a whole show based on the Rosenfeld character, though. I thought that would have been great. He was just the funniest guy in there. But, well, you know, but I'm grateful for having gotten to see Twin Peaks because it prepared me for the profound disappointment I felt when I watched Lost.
I was about to say, as far as, yeah, doing
was
a question
funny. I was
further,
thinking,
further
like,
away from it, that's Lost.
I was like, oh, man, it got killed at the end of the second season, although there were a lot of episodes in the second season, but it got killed in the second season, and it's Lynch. Like, I'm probably going to be frustrated at the end,
but
maybe
you know
not.
What? You know, I mean, you know, it, to not go too far off on a tangent on Twin Peaks, but what I think one of the things Twin Peaks spawned because of the frustration with, like, never really getting to know the killer or know what twisted weirdness went on in the woods that led to Laura Palmer dying, spawned all of these serial murder shows that we see today, you know, where they actually, like, you know, Criminal Minds.
It definitely got creepy at times. Like, it was pretty disturbing sometimes.
Yeah.
Can we and it blame was, like, David psychological Lynch? Creepiness.
We can blame CSIs? David Lynch for CSI. Absolutely.
Whoa. All right. Well, before I was on the fence about his movies, but now I'm not too sure.
The new mystery, I mean, I've been to that like restaurant chain based on it, and I cannot figure out.
It's not very much like Lynch. So the one weird thing, so when I started watching it, I was I don't remember how many episodes in, 4 or 5 episodes in, and I can't remember now the guy that owned the lodge, and his brother showed up, and his brother was like went out and partying with the Danish to try to get him to come in to buy into the Ghostwood development and all that stuff. He was always eating food and acting weird, even for most of the Twin Peaks characters, except Log Lady. She was just weird. But he came in. I was like, oh my God, that's the guy from Warriors. Because I had just watched. I had never seen Warriors either. I just watched it like. And that's it. He walked in. I'm like, oh my God, that's the guy with the bottles. Warriors, come out and play.
One of my most prized possessions ever was because Twin Peaks, I was doing, back then I was doing Wake Up and Smell the Coffee. And somebody gave me a Double R Diner t-shirt.
Cool.
Oh, wow.
And that was I probably still have it somewhere, but it's not shape fit to. I wore it everywhere. I loved that shirt. It had a cup of coffee. It said, good coffee. And Double R Diner, and it was a great shirt.
On next week's edition of Twin Geeks, we'll be talking about. Yeah, I need to go watch that. I haven't seen any of that yet. I did. There is, have you guys not to be all, you know, hackery stuff. There's a movie, I think it's out all over the place. It's called The Hacker Wars. It's like a documentary. It's
I heard somebody mention it, but I haven't.
I watched it, and it's pretty decent because it goes into the whole, you know, LulzSec, anti-sec, anonymous thing. It really takes some digs at Sabu. It gets, like, Barrett Brown from Austin, a lot of people kind of on camera and talking about it. The one thing that I kind of realized, but they kind of put it together for me, is that, and I don't know if people, you know, I don't want to destroy, you know, spoilers in the documentary because, you know, the Titanic sunk, that kind of thing. But they flipped Sabu, the guy who was, you know, kind of a higher up in a lot of the movement. They flipped him within 2 days, had him back on the street. And a lot of times when Sabu was communicating with a lot of the people online, a lot of the hackers online, they had FBI agents sitting there with him at the computer monitoring him. They had cameras in his apartment. They were monitoring every single thing that he did. So here's where it gets weird. The whole anti-sec thing that kind of came out of, you know, Anonymous and came out of LulzSec, all that came about, and this was Sabu, the main hacker, kind of leading this and corralling it and kind of getting the movement going. All this was done under FBI knowing it. So when we say, like, hey, he helped get Occupy Wall Street going, you can say, like, hey, the FBI kind of supported. No, really, the FBI supported Occupy Wall Street when the Stratfor hack happened. FBI hack Stratfor. You kind of do that name replacement. It's like, whoa, the FBI knew about all this stuff. It happened under their watch, and they let it go. And this is one of the few documentaries that kind of does all that, and you really do get some FaceTime with a lot of the players that have decided to kind of come out and say, like, hey, I was involved with this. I'm not anymore. Here's what happened. And if you like Sabu before, you might not after seeing this. But it's worthwhile. It's, you know, 2 hours well spent.
Well, so the deal was he – I forgot how he got caught, but the FBI –
spouted off in an IRC chat room, and
they tracked
him down.
His IP,
yeah, tracked,
right?
His IP down, yeah.
With a Visual Basic GUI.
Yeah, yeah. We'll trace it to you. I think they got some help from the next gen hacking team.
But they basically fingered, right? They got him, and they said you're going to go to jail. And he had a young son or something, and he wanted to be able to see his son grow up, and so he turned. Mm-hmm. I think that was what happened.
Ooh,
right?
And then that's pretty much what happened. No one knew he was gone. They went there. They flipped him. He actually got, I think, like commuted jail time because they said that he was like a stellar witness, an informant. He was like the most perfect informant there ever could be. The other cool thing, which is also very polarizing in this, is there is a character named Weave, who's a hacker that a lot of people knew. And Weave was a huge, and we talked about trolling before, which is kind of what made me think about this. Weave was a huge troll, and he's got a very, you know, somewhere between, he's caustic kind of guy, even online. if you watch him in this, he's kind of cool, but he's extremely caustic. He's like a troll in real life. It's like you want to really root for him, but it's like, man, you really kind of annoy me.
Isn't he the one that got out of jail and then started a company that, oh, I forgot, it was something crazy he's making money by taking advantage of other people somehow.
Yeah, he was always a big troll. He went in, he became a white supremacist while on the inside. Yeah, this is, or at least he said he was. This could have been a troll. But he's like, he spouts off really horrible things. And, you know, he says it's to incite, but still, you know, don't say horrible things like that. Don't become a white supremacist to troll people.
No, but I thought it was him. There was some guy that went to jail.
That
came out after he got out of jail, and he started a security company that, I think maybe they hacked people, but then they offered to let the company pay them to not release information about the vulnerabilities or something. I forgot what the deal was. It was one of those things where it was like people were like, are you sure this is legal? And he was like, oh, yeah, I really researched this a lot. I had a lot of spare time. And, yeah, it's completely legal, but, yeah, it's kind of, you know, dirty.
Extortion.
Yeah, it's kind of dirty, but it's legal, so we're doing it. I think it was him, but I don't know.
It looks like he's running a hedge fund, possibly, as well.
Yeah, I think same guy.
He's doing a few things. Wow.
Nice. Has he started his Bitcoin exchange yet?
Was he Weezy involved with Mt. Gox?
So anyway, worthwhile, especially if you like Anti-Sec, Lulsec, Anonymous, or if you don't, you know, it's worthwhile just because they do a pretty good, accurate job of putting the time frame together. Because that's the one thing, we talked about when it was happening, but I never took a chance to pause and look back and put all those time frames together, and it's a little bit, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but it's kind of cool
it's
to look
weird,
back and see how
things
played out.
It's weird to put a lot of different time frames together, like when you start connecting, like, when the Wild West was compared to, like, some other things that are going on. No, because it was, I don't know, in my mind, it's like when I think of, like, oh, the Wild West and cowboys and Indians, it's like, oh, it's so far ago. But it went into, like, the 1870s or 1880s or something. And
yeah, not much more than, I say 100 years. It's been 130 now.
It's kind of bizarre.
When you thought about it, it was 100.
It was 100 years, yeah. And if we do the Wild Wild West, that was, like, what, 1998?
Totally.
The Mechanical Spider.
I wanted that movie to be so much better.
Well, the show was pretty good.
It was 97 was when Wild Wild West.
That's the Will Smith?
The Will Smith one.
Vehicle?
Oh, by a year, yeah.
97.
Well, yeah, the fun thing to do is watch Wild Wild West and look at Kevin Klein, because clearly he signed up for a very different movie, like an actual real movie with a good script, and you can see it in his face through just about all the movies.
The pain getting out the dialogue. I actually like the old TV series, as cheesy as that was. That was kind of fun.
Well, I mean, everybody thought, I remember at the time when the previews and everything were coming out, it looked cheesy, but I mean, this was after Men in Black, and, you know, Will Smith was, you know, the star vehicle that wouldn't quit.
He could do no wrong.
He could do no wrong, and then this movie came out, and we're like, oh my God, why did you do so much wrong, Will? Why?
Just wait till I put Jaden in a movie, then we'll see.
Well, sometime look up, I think it was Patton Oswalt has a thing about the Wild Wild West, the MTV, like, music awards, where they did this huge thing that was supposed to promote the movie, and it was Will Smith and his entourage, and it just kind of goes from there. You know, if you think about it, because he had that rap, there was a song that went with the
movie. I think
movie.
I remember seeing that. Yeah, they did the big stage production.
Yep.
And it's one of those where the title of the song was pretty much most of the words in the
stupid
song.
Yeah, I remember him just being like Wild Wild West over and over and over again.
So,
no Fresh Prince of Bel-Air there.
Yeah, but when you start taking dates and events and start doing stuff with them, you know, the Trilateral Commission and the assassination of Kennedy and airing of the X-Files, then you can get all kinds of cool conspiracies out there.
So were we buying this or trying it or frying it?
There's so many things in that list.
Are we talking about Will Smith still? Yeah.
Yeah. Which one was this?
How did we get off on this?
I think we jumped off from Halloween costumes.
It's something about Harley Quinn.
Conventions and Harley Quinn.
There we go.
Martha Quinn, Medicine Man, files
in the last couple of months.
But then not.
But then not, taking it back.
Psych.
That's why I was so impressed, because X-Files is like nine seasons.
It's like 102 episodes.
When did you find time to watch all the X-Files? Like in the past, like 2 weeks or whatever.
Well, you know, the X-Files...
While working in my bed desk.
the whole alien abduction thing, you have to binge that, right?
Because they're going to start new X-Files soon.
Yeah.
It's a little like six-part mini, yeah.
Well, I remember the timeline on, you know, when Whitley Strieber came out with his book about getting abducted by aliens.
Communion.
Whitley Strieber came out with that book, Communion, which kind of was at the forefront of the whole alien. I mean, of course, there was... You know, Area 51 and all that was going on, but this was the first time that kind of in the modern culture started talking about like
Project Blue Book.
All of these
before Close Encounters.
Close Encounters.
That was in the '70s.
Was that before? Well, I was talking about
that was well before.
Well, you know, Whitley Strieber wrote the book, and I don't know if Close Encounters, but they talk about contact of certain kind. But Whitley Strieber talked about, you know, his contact. I think Close Encounters might have come out after that book, but I'm not sure. But I remember, you know, that's what kind of spawned off the whole, you know,
Christopher Walken spun
Men in Black, and then before that, X-Files was born out of that. That's when pop culture kind of glommed onto the whole alien government conspiracy.
Well, and X-Files featured in the first episode a in-house filmed sort of parody version of that alien autopsy video that was all like exploding in the news and conspiracy theories right around the early 90s time, late 80s, early 90s.
And then the old people that found the alien stuff that could keep them young.
Cocoon. And then batteries not included, guys.
Cocoon was 1987.
87.
Yeah. Close Encounters. That
was in the
70s. That was 79, I think.
Yeah.
77.
It was 77.
Yeah.
Well, Close Encounters of the Third Kind talked about it with a completely fictionalized point of view, and then Whitley Strieber came out with this idea that it really is
happening,
and maybe that movie was kind of a way of being a
distraction
gay,
or
you know,
introduction.
Now, he had the gray
softening
type
the
grays in his, right? That was the first.
Well, the grays kind of showed up in Close Encounters too. Sort of.
Yeah, they kind of did. There was an outline.
Speculation that Close
bit.
Encounters might have been a thing to kind of soften the blow about announcing the aliens were here.
But they also had that weird spider alien with the super long legs.
You're
it was
thinking
disturbing.
No,
that's Wild Wild West.
That was in Close Encounters.
No, you're thinking of Independence Day.
Although it may have only been the like director's cut of Close Encounters when they actually go inside the ship.
No, he pokes his head out.
Yeah, he pokes his head out.
But then
we got
to the movie, the Men in Black movie, when it's just completely trivialized the whole thing and just made it kind of
I thought that was real.
What? That was a documentary.
Yeah.
Did you just flash thing me?
All right. So are we try Brian or Flying?
All of them.
Yeah. Oh, somebody's been to Comet Lovejoy.
I think we're getting jiggy with it.
To throw in more references. Well, let's see. I'm going to cut back because we don't have all that much time left. Let's see. This one. If you've got the cash to do the lay down desk, then you might have the cash for this one. Yet another company is trying to do for homebrewed beer what Keurig has done for coffee. It's called the Pico Brew. Previously, there was a thing called the Zymatic, but it cost like $2,000 and was the size of a refrigerator and didn't work. So they've kind of regrouped, and the new machine is the Pico. Attempts to address some of the hurdles they had before. It's on Kickstarter right now for about $500, and it's going to retail for around $1,000. But it can actually fit on your countertop, and has you but you make beer by buying Pico packs, which are prepackaged boxes of grain and hops that you simply insert into the machine,
and you just need a light bulb.
Inside a scanner, yeah, it's the
Easy Brew Bureau.
Easy Brew. Inside a scanner reads a barcode on the top and downloads the recipe from Pico Brew's database. You can adjust the alcohol by volume and bitterness with a simple turn of a dial, but everything else is automated. So
it's kind of tough. It depends on if they use dry yeast or wet yeast.
Does it make one glass of beer?
No, it's about. It looks like what might be like a 3 or 4 gallon thing, but it's not enough. It
makes like a little growler.
You would want more. I would want to make.
No,
a lot
it looks
more
like it makes that. Those kegs like you can get at the like the Heineken kegs, the little.
Oh, okay.
Pony kegs,
or like a gallon or kegs. A gallon,
a little
or
more
two,
than
not much.
64 ounces probably. Yeah. Because that's a growler, 64 yeah. ounces.
It's not. I don't think it would be enough because, I mean, if you know, most beers take at least a few weeks. So I don't know if I'd want to wait that long between beer batches. It looks like the container has to stay hooked up to the machine. I don't know if you can buy other vessels. The one they did before, I think, was like $3,000 and did a lot more beers. This is kind of a toned-down version of it. I like the price. But I think you could kind of build the same thing with an Arduino and, you know, with some, you know, a little bit of soldering and some carboys and some glass vessels for like half that. And be able to make a lot more beer. I still like the idea. I like the name.
Okay.
You,
well,
want,
that's
it,
cool.
you want the emo the, Emax brew.
Yes. I just like saying, I choose you, Pico Brew.
choose you.
My cat's breath smells like cat food.
Pico Brew, return. And then
Chalmers.
This one, maybe, I don't think it'll be out in time for Jay's trip to New Zealand, but... Samsung has officially revealed its supersized 18.4-inch tablet, the Galaxy View. That's not a tablet. This is
that's
a tablet. As you might expect, the company's pegging this as the perfect device for people who consume heavy amounts of media. You know, Netflix, Hulu.
I thought you were going to say alcohol.
Heavy. Yeah, me too.
Heavy.
Pass the comet.
Yeah, it wasn't in the same website as the Pico
comet.
Aside from the absurdly large screen, which is a 1920 by 1080 resolution, the Android-powered Galaxy View comes with a 2.1-megapixel front-facing camera, an undisclosed 1.6 gigahertz octa-core processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 32 or 64 gigs internally, and it is expandable via micro SD. Although, with it being 18 inches, why didn't they just have a slot where you could stick a solid-state drive?
Yeah, that camera's weak sauce, too. I mean, considering how large it is, 2.1 megapixels isn't all that much.
Wow.
Especially if you're going to be doing any kind of, you know, like not you'd be doing FaceTiming on an Android.
It comes with
a
stand and HDMI and VGA ports.
No, that's not true. But it does have a stand. It does have a like kickstand thing to it. It has a nano SIM slot for LTE, and the battery promises up to 8 hours of video. They have not announced pricing or availability, so that can often be a not great sign when they show the product and we'll release some more information about it, like how much it would cost you later. Doesn't go over well, but so just in case the iPad Pro is not big enough for you, then you can go to this 18-inch Galaxy View tablet.
Or you know, you could always go buy the Super Nabby. They have the 23-inch and the 27-inch Nabby for children. It's like as big as the child.
Well, yeah, I say. Screw all this stuff. I'm just going to carry around a 27-inch 5K iMac with me.
Yeah, and a backpack.
And then I've got some real horsepower. So going from the giant cheap or giant expensive, presumably tablet, I did find on ours, because I wondered about this, Amazon announced the Fire tablet, the $50 one that they were selling in, you know, five packs or six packs where it was buy six, get one free. kind of thing, or buy six for the price of five. And it sounds like apparently the even though it's so cheap, that it's actually better than a lot of the super cheap, you know, $100 tablets from before this. It's not got a great screen. It's 1024 by 600 and it's a 7-inch screen, but you know, again, for $50, it's got a gig of RAM, 8 gigs of storage with micro SD. It has a 2-megapixel rear camera, so it's got almost as good a camera as the front camera on that ginormous Samsung.
Honestly, it didn't really matter what it's got. For $50, it's the fact that it is and even functional is honestly a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and so it sounds like it's actually one where you could, you know, at least for kids or people who are just trying to dip their toe into the tablet market, that there finally is like a good cheap 7-inch.
It's a bit better than the off-brand ones at like Walgreens or somewhere.
Running Android Wood 0.2.
Oh yeah, thousands of times better than those. Yes.
Yeah. It is an IPS display, so it's got decent colors, although it's 171 pixels per inch. So people who are used to better it's probably not one that you could like go down from your good tablet, from your higher end tablet.
Yeah.
But if you haven't used a tablet, you're probably, you know, it actually isn't a bad start.
It's
and again,
deal.
For kids, one that you don't have to worry about them wrecking.
Yeah. I was going to say, man, if you break it, it's like, well, just spend $50, get another one.
So you get the six pack,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then
just
you just got some spares.
Buy them for the whole family. Here, grandma. Here, your kids. Throw them at each other. We don't care. Yeah, so for $50, it's
tablet
kind of...
fight.
So, and you can watch. You know, you can watch the. I guess I don't know if the. Let's see. It's the Fire. It's Amazon's Fire OS. Which is a forked version of Android that lacks the Play Store.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that's the only part that I guess I would have a question on is how good a
app selection or
if you're an Amazon Prime member, it helps you to consume Amazon Prime mm-hmm. content, and it's really good at that. But the App Store is.
And that's really what it's designed for. It's to stream and read.
That's exactly
and listen
right.
To music. You know, they don't want you doing much else with it.
Yeah. I mean, you could sideload to your heart's content, I guess, but, you know, whatever.
And then the last one, which I think maybe we'll save till next week and talk more, was this guy, he's kind of fringy at ours, had a thing about Wi-Fi in his house, but I think that deserves a really good conversation next week.
Can we talk about the skills, or are we completely out of time?
The what?
The skills, the 100 skills. I know one of those skills, hitting someone with your tablet.
100 deadly skills? I guess we could work with that one. It's the SEAL operative's guide to eluding pursuers, evading capture, and surviving any dangerous situation.
Any dangerous situation.
But you're already trained in all of that, Barrett.
Not in the tablet warfare. Not yet. I don't think I could wield something as heavy as the Galaxy View.
Truly, no man can.
No, that's special
it's
training.
It's more of a defensive weapon, isn't
it's
it?
It's a shield.
That was what Conan carried, right?
To drive bad tech before me and hear the lamenting of their operating systems. Something like that. All right, well, I know that we are getting close, or should be playing the outro music already.
We've got another minute or so.
No, you have 22 seconds.
Pete can enumerate 99 more skills in that time.
Well, so the book is penned by a retired Navy SEAL. It's a manual to staying alive, packed with tips and instructions on how to handle situations like escaping a locked trunk to eluding an active shooter. It's all based on special forces training. Of course, the problem with this is the people who are interested in who will actually read such a book and study it and remember it are not going to be the kind of people who can utilize the skills, and
Step
the people
one.
Who can utilize the skills aren't usually high on reading
Escaping
comprehension.
A locked trunk is
Step
easy.
One,
just
become a SEAL.
Right.
Step the... two, get SEAL training.
All right, we're gonna next week we'll discuss how to recover a lost blimp.
Without Jay Lee. Bye, Jay.
Bye, y'all.
We'll miss you.
Yeah, I'll be back. Thanks for tuning in to Technology Bites. Some of us will be back next week.
When's a geek gathering?
A week from this Friday.
A week from
this
Friday.
From
this
Friday.
Okay. I'll have to put
You're going to fly back for that, right?
No. All right. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Darren.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
out of here.
Planted Forward is a nonprofit organization that helps refugee farmers start their own urban farming businesses within Houston city limits. All produce is grown using organic garden methods, and we offer weekly shares of produce from farms. Planted Forward's next season will begin the week of December 28, 2015. In a weekly share, you will receive 6 to 8 different varieties of freshly harvested vegetables grown using organic gardening methods. You can visit www.planetforward.org for more information. KPFT, Houston.
There has never been a better time to donate your car to KPFT. When you contact the KPFT car donation hotline, you will do something great for this community. Call 1-855-573-8227 to donate or find out more information. KPFT is the only radio station of its kind located in Texas. It broadcasts music, news, information, and cultural programming from national distributors as well as locally produced offerings and more. Your donated vehicle goes to support this unique voice for yourself and others. Have an old car taking up space in your driveway? Donate it to KPFT now. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Your contribution is appreciated. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.